You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. What will you remember about this summer, which is fastly moving on, or any summer? How about the smells, the distinctive odors of the fresh-cut grass, the barbecues, the chlorine from the swimming pool, odors that may stay with us for the rest of our lives, only to be recalled with the phrase, I remember that smell. What does that evoke in my mind? What is it about certain scents that when we smell them, we recall a memory or a feeling? And how does our nose work? How is the brain making sense of the dozens of different odors that we pick out each sniff? That's what we'll be talking about. The ABCs of odors and the brain interface with our nose, all kinds of stuff like that. Anything you wanted to know about smelling. I mean, this kind of smelling. My guests are trying to understand just what's going on there. Let me introduce them. Stuart Firestein is a professor and chair in the Department of Biological Sciences at Columbia University. He joins me here in our studios. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Firestein.
Thanks, Ira. Always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and Don Wilson, he's a research scientist at the Nathan Kline Institute and professor at NYU School of Medicine in New York. Welcome to Science Friday, Don.
Thanks, Ira.
Anything new under the sun in the science of olfaction? What do you call it? Olfaction?
We call it the science of olfaction, the olfactory system. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. There's a ton of new things under the sun in the science of olfaction. We're actually coming on to a 20-year anniversary that may be the most important, I think, moment in the modern era of olfaction, and that was the identification and cloning of a large family of receptors in our noses that mediate the sense of smell, that act like a lock. If you think of an odor as a key, and when they fit together, the brain is clued into the fact that this odor is out there somehow. And this identification of this large, large family of genes, 1,000 of them in many animals, as many as 450 in us, mediates
wow.
the smell.
And that's so that's sort of out of proportion to other things.
Right? Way out of proportion.
Right? Way out of proportion.
It's the largest gene family in the mammalian genome. The mammalian genome typically we think consists of about 25,000 genes. So in a mouse, it's about 5% of the genes. And even in us, it's almost 2%. About one out of every 50 genes in your genome is devoted to your nose.
And why is that? Is it so important?
I mean,
well, we don't use our nose that much, do we? As sight or whatever?
Well, of course, that seems to be the case.
Yes.
Although I think we use our nose a lot more than most people believe. The biggest problem with our sense of smell, or the feeling that we don't have a good sense of smell, is actually our bipedalism, the fact that we walk on two legs. And we have our noses stuck up here at 5 or 6 feet in the air when all the good odors are about 8 or 10 inches off the ground. Or, for example, as the case with other animals, they're more willing to put their nose where the odors are, shall we say, delicately.
Well, we've always heard that animals, like, let's pick out dogs, because of bloodhounds and things like that, that dogs are able to smell so much more sensitively than us and all different kinds of smells. Is that true?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I often say to people who ask me that question, if they have such a good sense of smell, why do you think they do that greeting thing that they do? I think you could do that from 10 feet away, you know?
Well, that's true. They get it right up there and sniff you.
Boy, they sure do.
So why do they need to be so close if they smell?
Yes. So some of it's behavioral. And part of another way to show that, I think, for humans is that we actually have very sophisticated palate, for example, for food, much more than many other animals. And we know that most of flavor is really olfaction, is really the sense of smell, not just the four basic tastes.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put the odor in your mouth, when you put the source of the odor in your mouth close to your nose, you do use your sense of smell.
Don Wilson, tell us what happens, what is connected to our noses in the sensory. What goes on in the brain when we smell something?
Well, it's actually really exciting because you mentioned the ABCs of olfaction. I think that's a good analogy because these hundreds of different receptors that Stuart just mentioned essentially are recognizing different features of a molecule. You don't have, for most odors, you don't have a receptor for that particular odor. You don't have a coffee receptor or a vanilla or a strawberry receptor. You have receptors that are recognizing small pieces of the molecules that you're inhaling. And the aroma of coffee, for example, is made up of hundreds of different molecules. So what the brain then has to do is make sense of this pattern of input that's coming in. I've got receptors A, B, and C activated when I smell this odor, and I've got receptors B, C, D, and E activated when I smell this other odor. And what we've found is that that what the brain is really doing, what the olfactory cortex and early parts of the olfactory system are doing, is putting those features into what we and others would consider something like an odor object, so that you perceive now coffee aroma from all of these individual features that you've inhaled. And in fact, once you've perceived that coffee aroma, you really can't pick out that, you know, there's a really good ethyl ester in my Starbucks today or something. It's you really have an object that you can't break down into different components. So that's what the brain is doing. And we know that part of that building of the object, that synthetic processing of all these features, is heavily dependent on memory. So you learn to put these features together and experience this odor percept. So it's really in some ways, olfaction seems really simple. I suck a molecule up my nose and it binds to a receptor, and so I must know what I've just inhaled. But in fact, it's a fairly complex process where it's akin to object perception in other sensory systems.
The fact that it elicits such strong memories, you know, so you can remember a smell from 40 years ago or something. Is it because, are they close together, the centers for smell and memory in the brain?
Well, in humans, it's in some ways the olfactory cortex is really enveloped by, embraced by parts of the brain that are important for emotion and memory. They're mm-hmm. direct reciprocal connections between the olfactory system and the amygdala and hippocampus, these parts that are important for emotion and memory. So, and we think that as you're putting these features together to make this perceptual object, the brain and the cortex is also sort of listening to the context in which I'm smelling it, maybe the emotions that I'm having as I'm smelling it, and those can, in fact, we think, can become an integral part of the percept itself. So it not only becomes difficult to say what the molecules were within that coffee aroma, but it also becomes difficult to isolate the emotional responses you're having to that same odor. I would just like to put a caveat in there that it's also the case, although I never want to diss my favorite sensory system, it's also the case that you can hear music or see a picture and have a whole range of memories flood back. So the olfactory system may not be unique in that way, that a single stimulus can evoke these memories and emotions. But in many ways, I may not be, you talked about the smells of summer, I may not really pay too much attention to the smells of summer, and then 5 years ago, 5 years from now, I smell an odor that maybe I didn't pay too much attention when I initially inhaled it, and now I've got all of the other memories associated with that.
I think one of the really interesting features of that memory connection, I think you'll agree with me, Don, is that in olfaction, the memories always tend to have a very strong emotional quality to them. That is, you smell something and you remember your grandmother's living room or your first day of school or your first lover or this or that. It's not like you smell something and remember a page of text or an equation or something that might come in handy, actually.
Right.
So there's always a very strong emotional tinge to these memories.
Right, you smell the pot roast in the hallways of an apartment
building. That's right. That's right. And that comes right back to you.
And remember your first lover. Yes.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, lover and pot roast. Okay, I can see the connection. Let's go to Sarah in Portland. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. My question is for the doctor. I'm 60 years old. I've lived here in the Northwest, always had a very sensitive and acute sense of smell, worked making perfumes and things. In May of this year, I had a course of Rituxan, which is a monoclonal antibody composed of human and mouse DNA. And my sense of smell since then has become like exponentially more acute, to the point where it's a joke in my family. And so I need to ask about that.
I don't know if we can answer the question, but it's a good one.
What was the name of that stuff again?
It's called Rituxan.
Really?
It's a monoclonal antibody treatment, in my case, for lymphoma, B-cell lymphoma. It was one of the first Genentech products.
Oh, yes.
And it's a combination of mouse and human antibody, you know, somehow.
Well, while Stuart's writing down to take notes here, Don, do you have any suggestions?
I'm afraid I don't know that. There are examples of individuals having these moments of extreme or periods of extreme olfaction. Unfortunately, it's more common to have a sudden loss of the sense of smell. I'd be totally speculating on why.
Well, you know, the speculation.
I guess enjoy it for now. Is it pleasant or is it?
It caught me. You know, I sort of recovered and you know started going out in public, and all of a sudden, places that I would avoid, you know, like the soap aisle at the supermarket, just because it was too overwhelming, all of a sudden was just, you know, I mean, I couldn't even get close to it, and so it's just made my sort of smell world much more vivid. And, oh, like my daughter came and she had a perfume on and she put a blanket around her. And like 6 days later, I could still smell the perfume on the blanket.
But could you smell things you had not smelled before?
Yes.
Like?
I can smell things like emotions on people almost. You know, people's skin smells are much more informative. I hugged a nephew and I said to him, you know, familial but not sexually available. And then I went, oh, my God, I can't believe I said that.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like I'm getting a level of information through my nose that is informing me about things that never did before.
Boy, the perfume people want to talk to you.
Welcome to life as a dog.
Exactly, exactly. Well, I thought welcome to life as a mouse.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sarah. That's
You're welcome.
Fascinating.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Some things you just can't explain?
No, we still can't. I mean, that is remarkable. It's very rare, as Don said, to see an enhancement like that. More typically, drugs somehow or another cause a decrease in the sense.
Don, have you ever heard of anything like that?
You know, there's Oliver Sacks has a chapter in one of his books where somebody essentially woke up and had the smell of a dog. Didn't smell like a dog, but smelled as a dog. And it was really, he found it really remarkable, and then it eventually went away. Another sort of thing related to that are phantosmias, which are not that rare, where you will smell, you will have essentially an olfactory hallucination. Unfortunately, most of those are not pleasant, so it's not like, oh, I get lavender again today, but it's fecal or something like that. So they can really be sort of debilitating, as she was saying. It, you know, this affects what store that she wants to go to. It can be. In some ways, we say that smell is you know not that important, but it can, when it goes wrong, it can have a fairly major impact on your life.
We're talking about smell this hour on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow talking with Stuart Feierstein and Don Wilson. Let's see if we get a phone call or two. Eric in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I lost my sense of smell here about 35 years ago from a blow to the head. And I lost it completely. I would have phantom smells, but they were nothing really recognizable, just kind of strange, like the taste of a penny, only in smell form. But over time, little by little, some of my smell sense has come back. And I was told by someone who wasn't a doctor that there's a vestigial smelling organ in the back of your mouth, behind the little thing that hangs down there. I was wondering if your guests had ever heard of smell coming back after the olfactory nerve had been severed, and if there might be anything to that organ that is in the back of your mouth.
Stuart, Don, any?
Well, so it's certainly possible to regain your sense of smell after injury. It doesn't happen all the time. It's not guaranteed, but the primary sensory neurons that we call them, the brain cells that are, they're actually brain cells in the very back of your nose, which are the sensory neurons that pick up the odors. And they're true neurons. They're embryonically created at the same time as the rest of the brain. And they're just sort of shoved out from the skull where they're in contact with the environment, much like the cells in your retina are really part of your brain. Mm-hmm. And unlike most brain cells, of course, they are able to regenerate, to proliferate. You can make new ones. There's a population of what we call adult stem cells at the base of the olfactory tissue, and you can bud off brand new neurons from that, and you do, even humans, throughout the course of your life. So if you destroy the original neurons that you got, they can be replaced. Depending on the nature of the accident, whether or not they can then send their cables, their axons, their connections back to the brain and do that appropriately, that's usually the thing that prevents you from regaining your sense of smell. As to the organ in the back of your throat, I don't know anything about that one.
Don, any?
No, I'm not. I don't think there's such a thing. But
Well, Eric, You stumped the panel.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. In a couple of minutes we have left. Is there a holy grail of smell? I mean, what you'd like to know that we don't know now? Let me ask you, Stuart, first.
Well, actually, Don probably has a better answer for this, because I think what we've learned in the last 2 decades from the molecular biology of smell with the discovery of these genes has been remarkable. And we have quite a good sense now, I think, of what goes in the front end of this thing. How, in a matter of what really only amounts to 2 synapses, 2 connections in the brain, from the olfactory epithelium to the cortex, which is what Don works on, we make a perception. That's really, to me, the great mystery right now.
Don Wilson?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. As I said in my last grant proposal,
Nope, they're listening down there at NIH.
I think there's really exciting things at both ends. I mean, we have essentially all these orphan receptors out in the nose that we don't really know what the ligands are for these different receptors, and how we turn this percept into, or how we turn this pattern into a percept that we...
Well, could there be things like this, like this woman who says she could smell fear, so to speak, she could smell emotions on people? Can there be receptors for fear or something that we don't know about?
Your physiology changes under different states. Hormones change, fluctuate. Animals use those kinds of cues all the time. It may be something that we're missing out on. Maybe this relates back to the earlier segment on the Star Trek things that we need to work on in the future. But the other exciting thing about olfaction is that since it is so dependent on the ability of the brain to change and memory is important directly in perception, olfaction is also an early biomarker for lots of different kinds of dementia and disorders, schizophrenia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's.
Right.
And so there may be opportunities there to explore.
We'll have to get back to that. I want to thank both of you for taking time to talk with us. Fascinating.
Ira, thank you.
You're welcome. Stuart Feierstein is professor and chair of the Department of Biological Sciences at Columbia. Don Wilson, research scientist at the Nathan Kline Institute and professor at NYU School of Medicine. That's about all the time we have for today. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarian Kim Oleski. Surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where our video pick of the week is up there. It's about bed bugs. You'll like to see this one about bed bugs. Flora Lichtman put it together. Also, you can download our podcasts and take along our iPhone app with you, so you can watch the video and listen to the podcast on your iPhone app at the same time. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.